One in five Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and deliver with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Come get up.
IGN Gamescoop. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN Gamescoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Justin Davis,
Scoop,
Tina Amini,
hello,
and Sam Claiborne.
Hi, everyone.
We've got a great show for you this week. We're going to do our rundown our yearly publisher rankings based on their average review scores, top 10 publishers. We got to talk about final bosses.
Ooh.
But first, the news we're all waiting for finally happened this week. E3 2020 has been canceled. It's the first time in E3's 25-year history.
Mm-hmm. End of an era.
End
of an unbroken streak.
That's true.
But I mean,
that's fair.
I don't know. People have been talking about the demise of E3 for many years now. How hard is it going to be for them to pick up the pieces and sort of relaunch again next year, especially if publishers put on a bunch of their own digital events this year, and everything goes swimmingly.
Which is already the plan. Like, Microsoft and Ubisoft have already been proposing that kind of thing. We're obviously far more equipped now than, say, 10 years ago to do that kind of, like, that's digital true live stream thing. So it's not an impossibility that we won't. We're certainly going to get those news announcements.
Yeah.
We're somehow going to get those demos, whether they're just streamed or whether, you know, we revert back to an era where we actually get hands-on the old-school way, like through through demos. Remember those things?
A pigeon is just going to deliver a SD card to us.
Exactly.
They could send out demo units, and then we could get burned discs.
We'll just send consoles with it loaded on, and then we'll ship it back.
Yeah, that's right.
We'll hire carriers,
Nintendo had these cases that were fully lined in foam, and then they had two GameCube-shaped like crevices in them, and then they put them in there, and then they clam it shut. Do you remember those?
Yeah.
Yes.
I found one like in the office, and we sent it back to Nintendo, but it was like for Twilight Princess 10 years later.
Yep.
Well, we've had like 3DS units, too.
Yes,
that's true.
The majority of the world, for 99% of people, E3 already exists exclusively as a digital event, and that's how they're consuming it and experiencing it. So it's very different for us and the people that work in the industry. Damon, you look like you...
Well, it's just, I think there's a caveat to that, because at least...
We produce the content.
Yeah, well, there's that. And then also, E3 provides the platform, and it's all sort of smushed together, and, you know, there are conferences going one after the other that everyone can tune into over a couple of days
but
and see
not,
the whole
that's
thing.
That's irrelevant to someone that's at home watching on their computer or on their television.
It's not irrelevant, because that's how that's what organizes the whole thing. Without that, now it's going to be like, who's doing what when? Is it spread over weeks, months?
Yeah, now that people are freed from a schedule and a cadence that E3 had dictated. But I see what Justin's saying, which
is
like...
The press conferences were technically unmoored from E3 to be... They weren't official E3 press conferences. It was the companies chose to glom on to.
That's true.
Like, they still had to coordinate amongst themselves to not run at the same time.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you don't want to get in the way of somebody else's announcement because you want yours to shine. And if you're worried about somebody else's outshining yours, still have to make those determinations.
I think it's super sad. I really like E3.
Yeah, I wanted to get your reactions to that. I still look forward to E3 every year. It's still an exciting time to me. So I was bummed to hear this news.
Yeah, of course. I mean, we get major announcements. Everyone's energized towards one singular week. We're all looking forward to that. And working towards that singular week. So for us, months beforehand, we're on phone calls scheduling our live show. And for publishers, they're doing the same things with their developers. They're working on these vertical slices for demos for either hands-on for the public or behind closed doors presentations, whatever it may be. Everyone's focus is on, let's make sure that we're getting something out for this big week so we can put our best foot forward.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of have been talking about this all week, but I really like the part of E3 that's actually kind of gone away a little bit, which is discovery. I have really fond memories of you and I walking around the Xbox booth and playing Bloodstained for the first time.
Yeah.
And seeing other games on the way there and being like, oh, what is that game? And checking it out. And like, it does have meaning that Microsoft had those indies in their booth, you know, because you just knew that they were kind of like picked out and there. And there's plenty of other places to do that type of discovery. And that's great. But E3 was one of them, and we were all at it. It wasn't a thing that like four people went to from IGN to represent. It was like every single staff member was there. And the word of mouth that would go around at E3 was so cool. People would be like, they'd come back from something and they'd say, I was really excited. I just played this game. You guys got to go play it while you're here.
It's got a plastic guitar that you strum along with. It's crazy. It's down in Kensha Hall.
Like, I think like, I know Justin, you probably haven't had this experience as recently, but I know you too have been part of that exact conversation of the past couple E3s, where it's like somebody comes to you and says, this is the most interesting thing. You guys got to come over here and play it. And
last year it was the blackout.
Why not me?
Well, I can't picture like the after the initial days, what you were doing on the show floor.
Yeah.
But you go on the show floor.
Did you say blackout?
Yeah, you don't remember that?
The Call of Duty one?
No, like a literal like blackout on the in the convention center.
I don't remember.
Momentarily, there was like a blip of power and everything was dark, apparently. Yeah. Were you on the show floor?
I was with you. And then
but we didn't experience it.
Yeah, it was like, I think we were in our like backstage room, and at the time we're like, I had like typed out a headline, I remember, of like, we survived the blackout.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
E3.
Yeah, we never ran that news story.
It's hiding in our CMS.
Yeah, it got caught up in something.
We forgot to mention at the top of the show that we have a couple hard outs.
Yes.
This episode. Tina has a hard out in 20 minutes.
That's right.
Justin has a hard out in 50 minutes.
I'll make it through the show.
Oh, 50 minutes.
Hard
is
out legitimate. T-shirts are coming, right?
that may have been a joke.
We will see. We do have Omega Cops t-shirts coming.
That's true.
We got a bunch of email about E3 this week. One is from Michael Charbonneau in Bar Like the Fruit, Vermont. And I don't know what that means. Well, what fruit? It sounds like bar. It's B-A-R-R-E.
Berry.
Berry. There you go.
Oh, Damon.
You would know that?
It took me a second.
You would know that the city, B-A-R-R-E, is pronounced
if
Berry.
If he said, like, the fruit.
That's what I couldn't figure out. Fruit bar?
Did that immediately come to you, Berry?
No, because
that's why I'm so
word.
Confused.
I don't have the written word in front of me. I only have his pronunciation. But if I would have seen the word and seen, like, the fruit, I probably would have been okay.
I don't know what he means by like the
fruit. Seems more like a workout class title to me. Bar.
Okay. Anyway, it's Michael Charbonneau from an impronounceable town in Vermont.
Nobody knows.
Do you think game announcements that were meant for E3 will trickle in much sooner than originally intended? Or do you think developers will wait until mid-June to try and show their stuff in one giant condensed clump as if E3 were still going on?
It so depends on how people's negotiations and strategizing go right now. Yeah. Like, you know, we're obviously thinking about what we're going to be doing in lieu of the one big event, the one big physical presence event. So it really comes down to like, what are Ubisoft's plans? What are Xbox's plans? They mentioned, Microsoft mentioned that they would have some sort of digital streaming event, but they didn't know exactly what the time frame was going to be. I suspect because of everyone's schedules are probably already outlined in a way that like summer/June in general feels like a good place to go, but they may not stick to that singular week.
You know, what's funny is that we've heard like, you know, these fantastic off the record stories about putting together a trailer for E3 and they're done like the Sunday before. You know,
and like they're making tweaks to it.
Yeah.
It's like handing the disc over at the end of Rogue One. He's like, take it, the door's shutting, the show's starting.
So I can think of at least several, one really funny specific example, which, you know, we can't share, but like they do that. And so like, I mean, the relief that must be setting in for not having a hard deadline must be one thing, but also like, is it fun to talk about games throughout the summer, or are they going to want to do it ahead of that? Like, that's what I don't know.
Plus, with next-gen consoles being a part of the marketing wheel this year, too.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. We haven't even brought that up.
Yeah,
it's next-gen launch year.
Yeah, which, like, those have their own marketing cycles, and they want to make sure they get announcements out before those in a certain cadence that's like, okay, here's some games, so you know what these consoles are operating with, or here's price points. We're waiting for that to drop first. Like, whatever it may be, there's so much other information that they have to juggle around that I imagine, like, I mean, we talk about E3 really early on in the year ourselves.
We already were having meetings about it.
Exactly, let alone publishers who have a lot more to contend with because they're building actual games and they're working on like messaging and what interviews they can make available and so on. So it's a lot to plan. So I can't imagine it'll throw things too off of the originally scheduled programming.
Yeah. I mean, I think on the flip side, these companies like E3's canceled. And so they're making it up as they go along. Like they don't
I think everything's
know
up in the air right
like,
now.
I hope that companies like IGN and certainly video game companies are good at giving the illusion that, oh, yes, everything is under control. Everything is fine.
What do you mean illusion?
Well. Well, but I just like, but that's not the case, right? Like E3 is canceled and they're all like,
No, there's stuff to figure out. Yeah. I think everybody understands that too.
But I do think you're right that like too many things were set too far in advance for there not to be summer game reveals.
Exactly. Yeah.
They're building towards playable E3 demos and the ad space has already been bought in many instances. And a lot of that.
Yeah, a lot of that, those transactions have already happened, right? Mm-hmm. So that their ad plan is kind of like done for the year.
And so it gives them a little bit of flexibility of like, oh, now our trailer is not quite ready. Maybe we can wait a little bit, but like it has to happen in roughly that time frame.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we may see some announcements trickle out before or after the fact too, depending on if they're reshifted focus of, okay, there isn't as much of an emphasis on this one week, so we have a little bit more flexibility to space stuff out. Mm-hmm. For us, E3, that month and that week, we see our highest level of traffic on the site and on all our streaming channels. So we like to take advantage of that. Publishers like to take advantage of that. They know that all eyeballs are all at once on the site, so it may not be as much of an important thing unless obviously there's something that the ESA does or someone else might do to revive a sort of E3 presence without the actual like physical LA convention center.
The death of E3 was greatly exaggerated to begin with. Like that's why like I do think E3 will be back next year. Like it was still so important to IGN and to, you know, everyone that attended that show that I was always a little puzzled by like, this show doesn't have any relevance. It's not important anymore. It doesn't matter anymore. Games can be revealed whenever. And I'm like, that's never really been our experience.
It's true that there is no other event of the year that gathers that large of an audience all tuning at the same time or that has that amount of game announcements all being, you know, sort of revealed at the same time.
There's kind of a...
I was just going to say, you could argue that Gamescom is like approaching that level, especially
Gamescom
as
has
last
a much bigger
year.
Attendance.
Footprint, yeah. But as far as game announcements, less so. But then you had Keighley's opening ceremony last year, which introduced more of a concept of, hey, we can relinquish ourselves from E3, LA, America in general, and we can focus more of our efforts on like a European-centric convention with a wider scale of an audience.
Yeah.
So it's. I think like we have to contend with the fact that things have changed, but it doesn't mean and it means that E3 needs to adapt alongside companies like Nintendo and Sony creating their own directs. But it doesn't necessarily have to mean that they die. They just have to adapt to it and evolve.
But a big, obviously publishers can hold digital events, but one thing that doesn't solve for is how do we get to hands-on time with all these games that we normally would at E3?
That's the point I was going to make. And we made jokes earlier about, sending out demo discs and stuff like that. But
that wasn't a joke. I want those.
Yeah.
Okay. I want them too. I'm down. I want cartridges, to be honest.
Exactly.
Like, we're going to ask for something. Let's just get on the same page first and ask for it.
Can they be chained to our desk again?
Yeah. Nintendo chained their systems to our desk. Actually, when we were at PAX, we did an Animal Crossing demo. And the guy that did the demo was like, I know you from IGN. I used to come to your office and chain the stuff to your desk.
I'm the chain guy.
Yeah, the chain guy. You were there. I forgot what I was going to say. You guys are also
getting
smart.
Previews, demos, getting hands-on.
Yeah, so demos. So for that, that's a really scary thing to not have E3 for. E3 means a bunch of press goes to E3, checks out the new stuff, and then tells you about it and gives you takes. Nintendo Directs and streams from Sony and stuff are going to make their games look like the best things.
The message will be completely controlled by the publisher.
Mm-hmm. And that's really worrying because they can use bull shots in the form of trailers and stuff like that. And they can do all this stuff. There's always a distinction between what you see behind closed doors, what you see on the show floor, and then what the thing was they showed in the press conference. And so like, it's on us as the press to figure out like, how do we tell people what's really going on? Because that's our jobs.
Critical opinion matters, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, we're fortunate enough that we're so global and we have other studios located in places that are hopefully advantageous to where developers are so that we can do local things. We can, like we do IGN First, where we go to studios and we sit down with them and we get exclusive access to games. So we can easily do the same thing on a different level. If people aren't touring around more themselves with their own preview events, we have access to go to them.
Good point.
We're lucky enough, you know, IGN is going to, you know, we're a big website with a lot of resources and we're probably going to be okay. I do worry about the smaller websites and independent voices that really relied on E3 to inform. When I worked at a smaller website, we actually didn't write that much during E3. We played all the games and then that was content for months after the fact.
Yeah.
And one way or another, IGN is probably going to get access to the most important things that we need to get access to, but like a smaller site might not. And that really bums me out that like E3 was like a lifeblood of hands-on impressions for games for, you know, many, many enthusiast websites. And that's a concern of mine as someone that just cares about the health of like, you know, discourse around video games.
Or you can have the perspective Kotaku has, which is, you know, previews aren't reliable sources of information enough. And so they've backed away, I think, entirely, or maybe at least in most cases, from preview coverage because it's a very controlled environment in itself. So even though, you know, E3 is an environment where you can go and you can ask questions, like even if you get a demo in your hands yourself, like either way, it's a vertical slice more often than not.
Mm-hmm. That access is critical. Critical to other websites in a way that it's probably not as much for us, in my opinion.
Well, it feels completely crazy to know that we're not going to E3 this year. But of course, E3 is like not the only thing that's been affected by the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. We're finding out this week it's really going to have a huge effect on all aspects of our life. We're really in uncharted territory here. And unfortunately, this whole scenario is really just beginning. We're really just sort of beginning to understand how serious the situation is. I know a lot of people in the GameScoop Facebook page were wondering what's going to happen with all IGN podcasts going forward. And even if, basically, there's a plan in place to keep producing podcasts, even if we have to do it from home, even if the production value isn't quite to the level you expect, we're definitely going to try and keep producing the shows for you for the foreseeable future.
We love talking about games. We'll find a way to do it.
Yeah.
Specifics TBD.
Anything to take our mind off of current events, for sure. Get together and talk about games.
Yeah, good point.
Let's move on. Oof. Teo, can we get, boost that. I want all the music to be loud.
Let's hear it again.
Yeah.
You know the game?
I don't.
That's when you level up in ActRaiser.
Yeah.
Wow.
These
a cute little effect.
Yeah.
I've said this before on the show, but the sound bites always drive me insane because like I know them, but not enough to like identify them. They're bouncing around somewhere in my subconscious.
Tip of the tongue kind of thing.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, you see that in comments all the time. I always mean to like mention what the music cues are, but I don't always remember. Let's talk about publisher rankings. This is a yearly feature that we always end up talking about because it's actually a feature that Metacritic puts together where they rank all the publishers based on a few factors. The average Metascore for all games they released in a year, that we're looking at 2019. The percent of games that got good reviews, which is a 75 or higher. The percent that got great reviews, which is 90 or higher. And then they take away points for the number of games that got bad reviews, which is 49 or lower. They crunch all those numbers and they come up with a list of all the publishers ranked. So we're just going to go through the top 10 before we dive into this. Are any sort of predictions?
I mean, Nintendo's always on the top.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, yeah, and then
because they have such a weird situation where they produce so many internal games, and then they get reviewed a lot more because they're Nintendo. So they just have this like confluence of like high scores and like high volume.
Okay, so you're expecting Nintendo to be high on the list there. Okay, let's see. Number 10, beginning with number 10, was Devolver.
Oh,
nice. Go Devolver.
Good for them.
Very reliable indie publisher. Average review score in 2019 of 76. They had Ape Out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They put out Downwell on Switch, which I still need to play because that's a vertical flip grip game.
Cool.
Number 9 was Square Enix.
Mm-hmm.
With an average review score of 76.1.
And this is just for the year, right?
It's just 2019.
Yeah, so that's Kingdom Hearts and Devil May Cry got pretty good scores.
Devil May Cry is Capcom.
Oh, yeah.
But course,
yeah.
Square Enix.
What am I thinking of? There's some other game.
Square Enix released more games in 2019 than anyone else. 28 different games
Okay.
in 2019. So yeah, Kingdom Hearts was one of them. I don't have the full list of their games.
Some other action game that, what am I thinking of? Okay, it'll come to me.
Oh, I'm sorry. They had Shadowbringers for Final Fantasy 14, Dragon Quest 11 S for Switch, Nier Automata, Game of the Year Edition.
Oh, yeah. That's
I don't think, I don't think Game of the Year Edition should count.
They well, you'll have to take that up with Mr. Critic.
Mr. Critic. I'll get him on the phone.
Number eight. This is pretty good. Number eight comes with a disclaimer.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know why that would be?
Because they're gone?
Because it's Humble Bundle.
Oh, okay.
Humble Bundle is owned by IGN.
Wow.
The number eight publisher in 2019.
Well, they had, I mean, like Slay the Spire.
They put out Slay the Spire, one of the absolute best games of the year. That's true.
And this year they put out Temtem, which is well reviewed.
Temtem is out now. I think it's early access, but yeah. It's definitely out and playable right now. Yep. That's the Pokemon-like MMO.
Mm-hmm.
Number seven was Xbox Game Studios. Average review score, 76.4.
I don't know what's wrong with my brain, but I'm trying, like, what did Xbox release last
year?
My
mind is just one
completely,
of these.
I mean, they had Forza.
They had Gears.
Not Forza.
Oh.
Gears. They had Gears 5.
Yeah. But that was it for the fall. Because they were going to have Ori and Battletoads, and those got pushed to
the But they did put the original Ori on Switch, which is a great game. Mm. That helps boost their score. But their score was held back a little bit by Crackdown 3.
Yep, Crackdown.
Yeah.
Number six, I think you'll be pleased with this one, is Annapurna Interactive.
Mm-hmm.
With an average review score of 80.5.
Mm-hmm. Make such great choices.
They did Wattom last year.
They did Wattom. I didn't realize this. They published Outer Wilds.
Yeah.
And Sayonara Wild Hearts. A game you rolled credits on, Sam.
Yeah, I rolled credits on that. I've only played the last level, but I rolled the credits on it.
It counts.
Yeah.
This is actually news to me, but apparently they published Journey on PC and iOS in 2019.
Weird.
Yeah. Wow. What a weird get.
I know. Yeah. A former PlayStation exclusive is now published by Annapurna.
I would have published Journey. Come to me next time.
Yeah. All right. Now we're getting into the top... five. Number five was... I wanted to build some drama. Capcom.
Cool.
With an average review score of 79.1.
I think that's Square Enix.
Average review 79.1. And
that
was
a joke from earlier. I don't really think
referential humor.
It's a callback.
And Tina was not wrong. Capcom had Resident Evil was such a good game, and it was reviewed really well. But then
so it was Devil May Cry 5.
And those have really high scores.
Yeah.
Then was there anything else?
Monster Hunter Iceborne expansion.
Mega Man collections. How many Mega Man collections?
I don't know if they put out a collection. 20,
30?
One per month.
There was at least 30 Mega Man collections.
But Capcom released 13 games in 2019. So I don't have the full list here. Number four. I'm not going to give a drum roll for this. Paradox Interactive.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Age of Wonders, Planetfall. I think they probably do a lot of PC strategy games.
So we haven't got
well received, but probably don't talk about a lot in games.
So EA might not be on the list, but we haven't got to. I was thinking EA, UB.
There's only
Sony,
three more.
Sony.
Or Nintendo.
Yeah.
So the top
Activision?
Three.
Actually, that was on last year's top five, I think.
It was.
Yeah.
You remember correctly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's a rarity.
So is that all of those might be missing from the top 10?
It's possible.
All right.
We're in the top three now.
EA's not going to make the top five,
okay.
I'm guessing.
So you're thinking...
Because of everyone's publicating.
UB, Acti...
We have four
UB,
left?
Acti, Nintendo.
Three left.
So, three left.
Top three.
Not Sony.
UB, Acti, Nintendo.
I wouldn't put Sony on there. They got Death Stranding ruined them.
Mm-hmm.
Their score average would be lower. And Days Gone. Like, they didn't have a good review year.
Let's see it.
All right. Okay, number three is...
Damn it.
Sorry.
That's Peppy.
Yeah.
Damn
it. Nintendo.
Okay.
Oh, number three.
They didn't come in number one.
Number three, Mario Maker 2, Link's Awakening, Fire Emblem. Obviously, had a
Luigi's
great year.
Mansion.
Those are really
might
good
be a little bit surprising.
Somebody
that
is outscoring
one.
Them?
Yeah.
Seriously.
Those are like, you just rattled off.
Two companies are outscoring them. Number two is Activision Blizzard.
Wow.
Nice. Okay, so we're doing good.
Big company.
And World of Warcraft Classic.
Sekiro.
That people like right. Call of Duty.
Call of Duty Modern Warfare.
I think one has to be something ridiculous then, because I can't imagine it being...
UB?
UB or EA.
One is a little bit ridiculous.
UB makes a lot of games.
Yeah.
Who is the number one publisher?
The number one publisher in 2019 was...
Epic.
505 Games.
Whoa!
Publisher of Bloodstained.
Yeah.
And Control Game of the
and
Year.
Control.
And Control.
Game of
and
the
Control.
Year.
Yeah. So those games, they did.
It was just for that.
It's a score average. So if you only do two games.
No. They had
they
other
actually,
games,
they,
too.
They had a special credit for games that won Game of the Year. That's not true, but they could have. They
get a bump.
They got a lot of Game of the Year.
IGN bump.
Yeah. 505 Games, the best reviewed publisher of 2019.
Well done.
Wow.
They did it.
Good for them.
Yeah.
So you were wondering about what those other companies. EA was number 13. They didn't have a great year. Anthem, of course. The Switch version of FIFA was apparently terrible.
Fallen Order.
They put out a new Need for Speed that nobody cared about. But of course, they did have Fallen Order.
Really?
Yeah, there was a new Need for Speed, yes. Ubisoft was number 14. Again, they kind of had an off year. Ghost Recon Breakpoint was kind of a bust. The Division 2 was good, but I don't think a lot of people bought it. They had no big single-player game for the fall, like an Assassin's Creed or Far Cry. Sony was way down at number 22. Days Gone, Death Stranding, Medieval, the reboot of that, all that sort of
stuff. Which was reviewed well.
Which, Medieval? Was it? I just don't think people cared about that
kind
much.
Came and went.
At the very, very bottom of the list was Bethesda, number 30. Of course, Bethesda's been...
But it wasn't Fallout. Like, Fallout 76 was the year before. Yeah,
they had Wolfenstein Youngblood. Everyone was kind of like, meh. Anyway, there you have it. The top
They're
10.
About to have Doom. I'm excited for that.
Doom is, by all accounts, Doom Eternal is looking very, very good. Before we move into our next topic, we're at 258, Tina.
Yeah, I got a heart out. Okay. 258, exactly.
If you want to step out and send in Mark Medina.
I shall send in the replacement.
Okay.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you for scooping with us.
I always.
Tina, half scoop.
What's she missing?
Lo-fi scoop to come.
Some pinball talk.
Okay.
Oh, good.
Let's check in.
Oh, good. That's a true hard out right there. A harsh out is what we call that.
Let's check in with listeners.
Hey, listeners.
This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
This is our friend Holden Hintz from Las Vegas. Remember him?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. King Strategy Guide.
Said, last week, I went on a double date to the Vegas Pinball Hall of Fame.
Cool.
And played arguably the greatest pinball machine of all time.
Medieval Madness.
Medieval Madness. Oh!
We were really going to talk about pinball?
It has many great components, from a troll fight to destroying a castle.
Come on. We don't need Mark for this.
What are some of your favorite pinball machine components?
What, toys?
He says pinball machine components. I thought Sam would know.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know any.
Well, welcome,
I
really Mark. Like, that's why I was trying to talk about
I really like springs, palls, I like
the
shafts.
The flippers myself are a big fan of those.
Yeah, yeah. Any sort of locking mechanism. I like optical sensors.
Magnets are good. There's ever a magnet better. Yeah.
So I know what he's saying, though. He's saying, like, you know, games have ramps. Those are really popular.
Yeah.
They have things like spinners ramps. And loops and pop bumpers and stuff like that. So the things that I like the most. Well, I like a type of game that now is becoming considered boring, which I still like, but there's too many of them now, which is the Medieval Madness thing, which is called a fan pattern. And that's where there's not a lot in the play field. everything's at the back of the playfield. So if your flippers are shooting all the way across the playfield to, you know, 7 or 8 shots that are in a fan pattern across the back of the game, that means that every shot, you know, you can hit pretty easily, and then it comes back to your flippers, usually by via ramps or via wireform habit trails, or like however you're going to do it. So I really like that. I also like upper flippers when there's like another flipper up top, and especially if it's on a mini playfield. I am a sucker for mini playfields.
Like Game of Thrones had that when you're up into the
And it was so wasted in Game of Thrones. There's nothing to do in that one. Yeah. But a lot of games, like the new Pirates of the Caribbean game, it's a ship, and the ship rocks back and forth, and it has its two own flippers, and they're small, and then it has spinners, and then you can hit into one part of it, and it's a cannon that shoots across the pinball machine to another ship. Is and that goes like inside
a,
that ship.
Is that like Black Rose? Is that what it's called?
No, this is the Black new Pearl? Pirates game. But yeah, Black but Rose
is it similar in how it's
Black Rose has a mast all the way down the playfield, and the ball rolls down the top just under the glass. Pirate games are cool.
Yeah.
They always work out. There's only a couple. So I like those things, and I like what else? What do you guys like?
I like the bouncy, the little round things where it just like
those are good, yeah.
And like the rubber bands that the ball touches it, it like pops it away.
Slingshots. So those are the two things that like have been.
I was about to call them that. I know. No, I don't know what they're called.
They've been in games for like 75 years.
Oh.
And whenever they break in games, like the games I operate, I'm always like, no, nobody's gonna know the difference.
I think my favorite toy in any pinball game is the lamp in Tales of the Arabian Nights.
Yeah,
is that the
spinning
thing?
Disc?
Yeah, the spinning
and you hit
disc.
It, it goes.
Oh, it's so satisfying.
And it has the lights that light up the playfield.
You get it at a good angle, and then that thing just goes crazy.
Yeah. Both Medieval Madness and Attack from Mars, who were designed by the same person who just put out his first game in 20 years, the new Stranger Things, they both have a similar component, which is in the center of the game, there's a bash toy where you can, like, you know, in Medieval Madness is a castle, and Attack from Mars is a spaceship. And you, like, hit it a bunch of times, and then it opens up, and then you the ball goes inside of it and kind of locks, disappears. I really like that, too. And in both those games, they, like, animate. So, like, the castle has these, like, towers that, like, fall and go apart and stuff like that. And I will say, for my money, you know, Medieval Madness is easily the best game ever made, as a tie with Monster Bash.
I love Monster
Indiana
Bash.
Jones and Lord of the Rings.
Okay, got it.
Oh. Four-way tie.
Good picks.
Yeah.
The do you know that Medieval Madness Tina Fey's voice is in that pinball table?
How would I know that?
Yeah. And then also, one
you didn't
of
look
other
at the IMDb credit.
Wait, what did you say?
Another cast member from 30 Rock is in it. Her boss, the like studio manager, is also there. Both Second City members in Chicago, and all pinballs made in Chicago.
Yep.
Yeah.
That game was made in 1997.
They hired these Chicago actors, and I'm sure at like a day rate, and one of them turned out to be Tina Fey.
And that's I think really she's cool. in Attack from Mars also, because those are made at the same time by the same person at Williams Bally.
Very cool. Mark, how you doing?
Great. How are you guys?
Welcome back to GameScoop.
Thanks.
Have you ever played the Super Mario Brothers pinball machine?
No. I've only played the ones we have out there.
You can speed run it.
Really? I maybe, probably not, though.
All you do is not flip.
Yeah, I can lose really fast. Is that any percent? Just losing crazy fast? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a type of game, pinball competition where they do a thing. It's not pin golf because
it's called just
else.
Put in a quarter and
no,
just like
it. What you do is you're trying to plunge and not hit any switch in the game. And so you get the lowest score. It's golf scoring.
So you're only working the one little thing and seeing how
you can nudge too, right?
Oh, sure.
Can't tilt though.
I never thought the nudging thing was real. Like I know you do in the computer games, like you can push a button and it like nudges it until I worked here and I saw you and you were like, and I was like, oh, people like actually do that.
If you're not tilting, you're not trying.
I feel like I would break it.
I feel like to my eyes, Sam's very rough with the tables. I would be, I would never dream of treating the table that way, but Sam's a pro and knows what he's doing.
Mark, we've never got yelled at when we're at a bar.
That's true. What are you working on today? Can you share what you've been working on at your desk today? Or is it something that's under embargo?
No, I don't care. We're working on a Devs React, which is what I feel like I'm always working on now.
Yeah.
And this weekend is Half-Life 2. And cool. I want you guys to be very excited because I think it's going to be really, really cool.
I am very excited.
It's I say this almost every week. This is my favorite one.
And just so everyone is aware, this is Devs React to a speed run.
To a speed run of Half-Life 2. Yeah, the original gameplay programmers for Half-Life 2. Reacting to a speedrunner. His name is Wayzone. And it's really, really funny. These guys are super funny, and the speedrun is completely broken. It's so cool to watch. Yeah.
As so many speedruns are.
Yep.
Very cool. Okay, what did you guys think about this news this week? Strange news this week that Reggie Fils-Aimé, he of former head honcho of Nintendo of America.
Inventor of the Bigfoot pizza.
Inventor of the Bigfoot pizza when he was at Pizza Hut. He's joined the board of directors at GameStop. Mm. Does this surprise anybody?
Well, I mean, I don't know how many people are on the board of directors. Is he one of 1,000?
That'd be a lot of directors running GameStop.
Is it that big of a board? We've been reporting on GameStop recently.
Well, it's just
And they're trying to change a lot of what they do. And part of what they do is trying to make like spaces for people to come and play games instead of, you know, just selling games. And honestly, that's exactly what Nintendo did. They're always like, come to a house and everybody play together. So he kind of makes sense in that stretch.
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't think it's a surprise. Nope. You know, I think he's semi-retired.
Yeah.
And that's what semi-retired, you know, business people do is they join boards.
Yeah, you can use your expertise, but you don't need to go into an office every day.
Yeah,
right?
you advise them and like, typically, this isn't like a hard and fast rule, but like usually there's different people on the board. Like, I've never seen the GameStop board. I don't know who's on it. So having done no research at all.
We know one person.
Well, yeah, you're right.
But out of 999 people, we know the one.
Yeah.
There's probably some people that have retail expertise. They don't need to know anything about video games. So it's like there's probably some JCPenney executive that's on the GameStop board. And there's probably some people.
I don't know
people,
if you want JCPenney advice.
But like, you know, and then there's people that have video game expertise. And there's people that have, you know, probably digital expertise. And like, you know, those people put together, make up the board. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're the ones that are sort of helping the CEO steer the ship. So, I mean.
Could he be on the board of directors for GameScoop? Is he a good choice?
Maybe he already is because there's 1,000 of them.
Yep.
Let's have a GameScoop board of directors.
We could get a board, right? That's no big deal.
We can do whatever we want.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it just be you four that are on the
show? No.
We report into them.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Why do we want to do this? Wait, that's not really
what you want? You want another layer?
Like, well, if it's
this is going to be the show this week. They're like, nope, pinballs, nope, no, that's not going to work.
Wait, we've made a horrible mistake.
If it's a bunch of retired people we respect, then sure.
Yeah.
I'll work with them.
That's true. It's like, never mind.
I guess it was a little bit surprising to me and other people that Reggie is a very well-respected,
video
game executive figure, and GameStop is a less respected video game entity. And
yeah.
I don't think a lot of people have a lot of confidence in their future. So him joining the board of directors is kind of like, well, does he know something we don't? Does he have a lot of confidence in GameStop's future?
I don't know. Well, part of joining a board of directors is that, you know, You are helping out, but you're not, you know, depending on that company for sustenance.
Yeah, maybe it's like if they do complete a turnaround story, it's like, oh, Reggie helped aid in this turnaround story. But then if they go completely bankrupt, then it's no skin off his back. Like,
It's kind of a good risk for him.
That's true.
Also, I think GameStop probably has a lot of goodwill in various parts of the country. It's just not on the internet.
Mm-hmm. Think so?
Yeah, because it's like, where else are you going to go hang out and play games? I mean,
it's like the only place to buy video games in many towns.
Yeah.
I guess that's true. All right, this is an email from Pete in Melbourne. It says, just wondering what you think makes the perfect final boss in a game, and what are some final boss traits that you think work well, and what are some that you hate?
Like bosses that you grab their tail and you spin them?
That's what you really like?
That's perfect.
Yeah.
It's perfect. Sometimes you choke them, though. But for the most part, it's...
What are you talking about?
You're not referencing Mario anymore, and
you choke the throws. You know what I'm saying? When you're trying to get a good speed run time.
Oh, okay.
Everyone speedruns Mario, right? Sometimes you choke.
Mario was throttling Bowser.
Yeah.
Would that work?
You know?
Could Mario choke Bowser?
I don't think so.
Could he get him in a headlock?
No.
Bowser's very big.
He's not tall enough.
He's a big neck, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know how he grabs his tail. Like, he grabs just the smallest part of his tail.
He's super, Mark.
Yeah.
You're saying that the point of his tail is not big enough to grab?
I'm saying that's the smallest part of his body. I'm surprised that that's what he's able to grab to be able to keep grip of this giant turtle man.
So you're thinking more of a claw would be better?
Yeah, but like you said, he's super. He doesn't follow normal rules. Well, like how does the hat with wings stay on his head? Like, wouldn't the hat just fly off? He's super. That's the answer to every question now.
Boss fight thing I hate.
You really threw me for a loop with the hat.
Is when a boss is giving you important plot.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's like, it's very stressful. Like, bosses are stressful. You're trying to figure out where to hide and what their patterns are.
They're like, it was me all along.
Yeah. And then when the boss is like just dumping information on you, I'm like, I wasn't listening to any of that. Like, I'm trying to stay alive.
That's kind of how BioShock works.
Yeah. A lot of games fall into this trap of like, there's something really important that requires your constant gameplay concentration. Mm-hmm. And then they're dumping important plot information on you at the same time. It's insane.
Once you're ready to fight the boss, you're ready to fight the boss. Right, is what you're saying.
Yeah, or just like I can't split my attention that way.
Yeah, one of our reviewers, TJ Hafer, said he was having a lot of frustration the other day because he was fighting a final boss, and he didn't say which game. Maybe it's Embargo, who knows? And he said that there's like a cutscene there, and it every time he died on the boss,
ooh,
you have to rewatch
an unskippable
cutscene
like, before a hard boss is evil.
Yeah, it's really bad.
Mm. Yeah,
Banjo-Kazooie has a quiz show.
Yeah, it's really bad. I love that game, but it's so bad.
And then the boss fight, it's really hard. It just goes on and on forever.
Yeah, it's a million forms. Times. Oh, yeah. Another boss fight thing I hate is like... And
we really changed the topic of this.
No, that was love and hate. Another one is when it introduces some mechanic. Like, you're playing it in a way that's counter to the entire rest of the game. Like, it's a platformer, and then you're not platforming on the boss. Like, you're doing something else. So many games do this garbage.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, why don't they use the skills you built throughout the game and then challenge you on them?
Yeah, and there's just kill Hitler.
You jump off a ledge and kill Hitler.
Well, I think you're both talking about two different games, but
we are.
I was talking about Wolfenstein.
Oh man, I was talking about Bionic Commando.
But I was picking up what you're both putting down. This led me to wonder why do we even call them bosses?
Yeah, we've talked about this before. It's crazy
because they're in charge.
But
right?
That's not always the case.
That's true.
I mean, there's an etymological history to that that I'm sure can be researched through the Video Game History Foundation. We should ask them where was the first paper sightings of boss.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny you asked that.
Okay.
It's like side-scrolling beat 'em ups, right? Where it was like the boss of the gang, and they were the one you were taking down at the end.
Because I remember like the idea of a boss ship, like that's really early, and there's a game called Gorf that has that.
Well. Yes, that might be the first game that had like a final boss, but I don't think anything in the game's marketing calls it a boss.
Well, that's what's weird is because we would just call that a mothership, right?
Yeah.
Mappy has a boss in it.
The instruction manual.
It says boss in Mappy. It says boss the big bit for one of the guys.
In Mappy. So when would Mappy have been?
And he's Mouse Police.
Yeah, that's true. Where does it say boss for Mappy?
In Mappy in the title screen, it shows Mappy and it says Mouse Police.
Okay.
And then it says some other guy, which is just a cat. Okay. And it says boss the big bit. I don't know what it means.
But, so that makes more sense if boss comes from the idea of there being like a crime lord.
Right. You know, that's where I think
the boss
came from.
Of a crime family.
Yeah.
And if Mappy's a policeman, obviously he'd be going after
the boss.
Local crime family.
Yeah.
So I get that.
Starring Mappy as Mouse Police.
I get that, but like so many video games don't follow that sort of like traditional like crime family.
No, you've even heard stuff like it's like, oh, this is a boss level, and it's just like a level that's harder than the other levels kind of deal.
Exactly. But in my research, I did find that the instruction manual for the original Metroid on NES, this is why I was posting some photos of this week, it says in the manual, Samus's mission is to destroy the mother brain in the planet's central base. On the way, he continues to search endlessly and to kill the
mini bosses
that he beats.
So even in, that's 86?
86, 87.
In 86, not only were we past boss, we were on to mini bosses by then.
Okay.
Well, is it mini bosses or many bosses?
No, mini.
Mini bosses.
I remember mini boss being a term from Metroid.
Yeah.
I remember it being that. Because Nintendo Power used it too. Okay, I was wrong. Mappy as Micro Police.
It changes everything.
Micro Police.
But does it say boss?
You know, and then it says Namco, which is cute. That's the name of a Nyam cat, Namco. It's one of them. As boss the big bit. I was right about that. And then it also stars Mewkies as Naughty Folks.
Is boss the big bit actually supposed to be like the final boss though?
No, it's just a big guy.
So this is the English instruction manual to Metroid.
Yeah.
Well, you can't. They were printing whatever they wanted in those things.
But I'm just saying this.
They were all made up.
It's an early reference to calling them bosses.
Yeah.
You know, I read a really. I'll dig it up and send it to you. Maybe we can put it in the comments of GameScoop. A really interesting article about Mario enemies and how their naming conventions, like. Some enemies don't have an official name, and colloquially, like we know, like, you know, a Bullet Bill is a Bullet Bill, but some of those names are just made up. Like, they're not canon anywhere in Mario. But then they've been canonized, like, by the fan community, and then they work their way back into the games. It's just like, well, everyone knows it's called a, you know, Shy Guy or whatever. Like, but some of those phrases didn't come from Nintendo.
Yeah.
That Mario 2 has some good bosses in it. Fry Guy, Hydlide.
Yeah.
Mouser.
Again,
Cloglip.
Again, this brings up the question. Are they the boss?
Wart?
Are they the boss of this area? Like, they're like, they have employees that report to them.
Is yeah. It's Triclide, I think, is the name of that boss. Did I say Hydlide? Isn't Hydlide a different game?
I think Hydlide is its own. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As part of this discussion, I don't like most boss fights. Yeah. I think.
What about Fry Guy?
I think, on the whole, more of them are bad than good. Like, I think too often they're throwing some gameplay gimmick at you, or like, you know, it's a very different experience than the rest of the game is.
Mm. What about boss fight music? It's always the best.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. I have a question about that description, though. Do you think...
Description of what?
The Metroid. Do you think that they said he because they're just oblivious?
Yes.
Interesting question.
Or they're preventing spoilers?
I think they're preventing spoilers.
Yeah. No. Think about the people that were localizing...
I think they're completely oblivious that Samus is a girl.
The people that
spoilers?
Were...
Oh.
Think about the people that were localizing that game in 86 or 87.
Yeah.
They had no
before
idea.
Before the NES
like,
was popular.
Like, I think it's funny to think, like, ooh, they were preventing spoilers.
That's a lot
no,
of people
they,
think.
No, they weren't.
They just had no idea. they just assumed Samus was
they just
guy.
Never beat the game. Mm-hmm. That's funny.
Maybe.
Maybe.
You're going to give them the benefit of the doubt?
Yeah.
Okay.
One more quick question before we get to Video Game 20 questions. This is Steven from Austin, Texas. Says, I listen to a few different game podcasts, but I've always loved GameScoop's banter and camaraderie the most. Also, as a gamer of a similar age, I tend to share your outlooks and opinions. I grew up in the heyday of 8 and 16-bit games, but fell off of gaming around the Nintendo 64 and PlayStation era. To me, the low-res polygons were just such a step back from the beautiful pixel art of the SNES and Genesis generation. Mm-hmm. I didn't get back into gaming until Mass Effect 2, which showed me how epic and cinematic video games had become. Since then, I've been fully back on the bandwagon, but I have a huge gap in gaming knowledge from the PS1 to early PS3 era. Mm. Thus, I've relied on YouTube and watched Let's Plays of games that I never played or can't really get my hands on now. My question is, as professionals in the field, do you have any similar gaps or blind spots in your video game experience? What do you do to try to shore up those areas? Mm. Gaps.
Yeah, I didn't play anything on the PlayStation.
Yeah. You've mentioned that
and
before.
I was going to get a PlayStation Mini to remedy that.
But then it turned out
to
be horrible.
I really intentionally went out and got some of the games that I know are more timeless. Like
you've been playing Final Fantasy VII?
Final Fantasy VII, exactly. I try to track those games down. But that system had a lot of things that were like locked on it that I would never go back and play. You just kind of had to be there. Mm. Like the Tony Hawks and the sports games and stuff like that. I mean,
yeah.
Not worth it. But I'm really interested in obscure, like cool games like Klonoa and stuff like that. And, you know, I spend a lot of time going back and playing old games like you do and in various ways. So,
yeah. I would say like original Xbox. I was a PS2 kid around that era, and I played Halo. I really can't think of any other game I played for that.
Once the 360 came out and had backwards compatibility, it really helped me learn that library.
Like go back. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I never did because like I got a 360, got Halo 3, and it was like, you know, just staying current. And so, that's like a huge gap. Then there's like weird ones where it's like Sega, Saturn. But like, I think that's a gap for a lot of people.
To everybody.
Mm-hmm. Other than that, no, not really.
I didn't play Saturn or Dreamcast. And I had a good reason to, because I had gotten the Genesis, the 32X, and the Sega CD. And
then
I was
like,
what am I going to play on all these systems? Like, there's just nothing that I like on any of them. And I have three... you know, stacked up Sega systems. And then the Saturn came out. I was like, no way. There's just no way. And by the time the Dreamcast came around, I'm like, they're never getting me back.
Yeah. A more recent one would be Wii U. Like, I never really played a Wii U.
You didn't own one?
Never owned one. And
what's up?
You never bought a Wii U, right?
I did.
Oh, you did? Yeah. Okay.
How do you think I played NES Remix 1 and 2?
Oh,
okay.
So good.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Sorry, go ahead.
I don't have any time gaps. Like, since I've been 5, I've been gaming, you know, consistently. Never stopped. Like everybody on Earth, like, you know, even though I've been playing games my entire life, like, there's definitely games that people love and adore that I just, you know, never got around to. But also in my professional career, I've kind of tried to close that gap. Like, computer RPGs were always something that I admired from afar. I really, respected all the adoration people had for games like Planescape Torment and, you know, Baldur's Gate, all of those classics. And then I've made a deliberate effort to sort of try to work my way through them. And, you know, now I do know and like computer RPGs. Point and Click Adventures are another similar one. Like, I always knew that everybody loved them and they were so beloved, but it was not an experience I had. And then I've since gone back and played most of those classics.
Be a great collection for Switch. LucasArts games.
That would be great, yeah. I've mentioned this before, but 90s PC gaming is probably my blind spot. So we never had a PC growing up. So I never played Doom. I never played a lot of those LucasArts.
X-Wing versus TIE Fighter.
Is that still the case?
Well, since they've re-released a lot of these games on modern platforms, so I got to play Monkey Island 1 and 2 and Day of the Tentacle, that sort of stuff. I played Maniac Mansion on NES.
SimCity?
King's Quest on NES. I played SimCity on SNES. Mm-hmm. I never played Quake. I never played Warcraft 2 or 3, like that sort of stuff. So I missed out on a lot of that PC gaming in the 90s.
Mm. I mean, we all missed out on arcade stuff, so it's been fun going back and learning about the first gen of arcade games.
The early arcade games, for sure. I never played Shark in arcades.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I never played Pac-Man or Donkey Kong or anything. Like, those are not games. Those are my favorite games, and I'd miss those entirely. Yeah. I'm just too young for them.
My family had a bar, and that's how I got
the
exposure to
the Mario pinball machine.
Mario Pinball and Pac-Man and Donkey Kong and Street Fighter. Yeah.
That's great. All right, and that brings us to video game 20 questions.
Whoa.
It's also ActRaiser.
Damn.
Our suggestion this week comes from Sky Brown. Let the questioning begin.
Sam?
This is from before 2000?
Is this from before 2000? No.
Is this game on... Was this game first released on this generation of consoles?
No.
Oof. Okay.
Is it on this generation of consoles?
Yes.
Ooh.
Is it on the Switch?
No.
Okay.
No.
Is it... A clarifying question. Mm-hmm. Please, I would like to... I'm putting a request out to the panel to not be charged a question for this. Okay. When it's available on this generation of consoles, like, does that mean that it was, you know, is it a backwards compatibility thing that, like, you can play a last-gen game on Xbox One, or was it, like, released on this generation?
I don't know if the board of directors will allow me to answer that question.
Okay, so was this game released, like, you know, for this new generation of consoles?
Yes.
Okay.
That's fine. Mm.
It's not just a situation where you can, like, there's some arcade classic.
Yeah, yeah.
But not Switch.
Yeah, not Switch.
Is this a first-party game?
Yes.
Was it released on PlayStation 4?
No.
Microsoft first?
Yeah, it's got to be Xbox.
If it's not on Switch, yeah. But
it could be Master Chief Collection.
Yeah, because it was originally released for 360, right? It was after 2000, but not originally released for this generation, I think is what he said.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
it is available. Okay, was
you're saying a Halo game?
And it's and you said it's a first-party game.
Mm-hmm.
So is this a first-party Microsoft game?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So it's Halo. Guess we got this.
Well, probably.
Does it have Space Marines in it?
No.
Okay. And it's nothing.
Does ODST count?
I think we should narrow down the original console. So, because it could be Xbox or it could be 360. So, should we burn a
question? Could be Phantom Dust. Does this game have a really cool card game system in it?
No.
Aww.
That's 10.
The heck is Phantom Dust?
It's a game with a really cool card game.
It has this card's in it, so.
I'm out.
Yeah. Dude, Phantom Dust rules. God, I thought for sure I had it there.
Yeah. Are the boys in Gears of War, are they Space Marines?
But that wasn't released.
Oh, yeah. It could be Gears.
It could be.
It's not re-released in any way, though, right?
No, Gears 1 through 5 came out on...
Yeah, you could play Gears 1 remastered for Xbox One.
Is this game a part of a series?
Yes.
Is it a shooter?
No.
Oh, maybe it's Peggle. Oh, wait, that's EA. That's first party.
So hold on.
Jump to Peggle.
So
because I know Damon and we share a mutual love for Peggle, and we're going to speed run it, each of us holding one part of the
console. So there's Rare Replay, and Rare is owned by Microsoft.
That's
right?
True.
So
that's true. They are now. Yeah.
It could be Banjo Nuts and Bolts.
Yep.
It's not a shooter. It is a first party Microsoft
game. Does this game have animals in it?
Of a sort?
Wait.
Is Banjo a sort of animal?
No, hold on. Like, is this game associated with Rare? Is this like a Rare related game?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay, here we go.
He just means humans or animals. I hate it when he does this.
We have six questions.
Yeah.
Is this game in Rare Replay?
Yes.
So it's Viva Pinata?
Yeah.
Could be Viva Pinata.
So it could be Viva Pinata. It could be any of those games. Could be, you know, Grabbed by the Ghoulies.
Okay. Wait, Viva Pinata not on Rare Replay?
Yeah, it is.
Is it?
Yeah. That and the sequel.
Does this have pinatas in it?
Oh, yeah.
Is it the original game in a series?
Yes.
Is it Viva Pinata?
Yes.
Woo!
Viva Pinata.
Sweet.
We've been on a streak recently.
2006.
That's because I haven't been on.
That's a good point.
What do you got today? Right,
I'll take it up with the board afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
We did it.
2006. I was worried you were to ask me if it was first person, so I made sure I knew that, yes, it's first person. You just, but you can't see yourself.
Yeah, do you think you're a pinata?
No, I don't.
You're a person.
You're you.
What if you're a human pinata?
Creepy.
Yeah.
That's weirdly overthinking it.
Do the pinatas in Viva Pinata have souls?
I don't know.
They mate.
They mate a lot.
They sure mate.
They do romance dances.
They do?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really, really cute to show them, you know, making whoopee and making, you know, replicating. They have these cute little romance dances, and each animal's romance dance is different. And you get to watch the romance dance, and then they have a baby.
Mm. And then sometimes they'll romance dance with the baby, and
that's
what Mark's done. that's where I draw the line.
I really like. I played a lot of Rare Replay, and I think Viva Pinata is the game I played most in Rare Replay. Like I didn't quite get to the end because it gets weird and grindy at the end. But like I probably played 2/3 of that game a second time. Game's great.
The hard mode suggestion from Sky Brown was the DS Viva Pinata game.
There was a spinoff.
Yeah. I thought that might.
What's
be
it called? Difficult.
I don't remember. It's Viva Pinata something.
Is it? Did it do the thing all those games did?
Probably
DS
Viva Pinata Romance Dance.
Pinata digging. I don't know.
Like Dual Strike. That was fabulous.
It's been a long time since I've played Viva Pinata. Do the pinatas animals actually have any sort of pinata function? Like, is there any reason that they're pinatas?
Yeah, they're full of candy. Is what
they eat. They eat candy.
Is that true?
That's like a thing that you can.
So you
give
feed them candy
them.
To get the stuff.
That's what real pinatas do.
Yeah, they eat candy.
They eat the candy, and then when they're ready, they go into the store, and then you can buy them.
I go to a lot of kids' birthday parties now.
Yeah, and it's always a pinata.
Well, that's very popular in the Bay Area. You know, even if it's not something that's like culturally part of their family, it's just a very frequent birthday party thing. And it's always, you're always beating their favorite thing. It's so weird.
Now the frozen princess.
I love Elsa, and then I'm going to beat her with a broomstick.
Yeah,
it's insane.
Yeah.
No one blinks an eye at it.
The game Viva Pinata doesn't have that mechanic.
I don't think so.
Where you don't beat.
I don't remember beating.
You know, but they eat
pinatas.
Like, you know, the
you feed them candy.
The predator ones will eat the plant eating ones if you don't separate them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Again, just like real life.
I live in the Mission, and there's like a lot of shops there that sell pinatas, and they're they're so funny in bootlegs.
Yep.
Like they're crazy cool. Sometimes they like look pretty good, and sometimes they look terrible. But
doing
like,
whatever they want with those pinatas.
A lot of times they're like the same human figure is used for Master Chief and Mario, and they're just like decorated differently.
Just like green with like a helmet.
Yeah. Or it's just like the big Mario head with like a big mustache, like painted. It's so great.
It reminds me of like going to a Halloween store, and it's like everything is like.
Yeah.
It's like, this is Mario, but we don't have the license.
Yeah,
so
green adventure elf.
I saw one, it was like Aladdin, and it's like a lad in a costume or something like that. I'm like, no way, that's so good.
Yeah, there's like Plumber Brothers.
There are two food trucks in this neighborhood that are Nintendo knockoffs. There's a Yoshi,
there's Yoshi's
Poke place, and I just saw another one that was Mario themed or something. Yeah.
Real quick, before we go, Justin, you wanted to mention Murder by Numbers.
Oh, yeah. I really love it. It's great.
New game on Switch.
Yeah,
it's Picross with a story.
Yeah, it's Picross mixed with Phoenix Wright. So you are investigating the series of murders that happen. And then the way that they integrate the Picross is so clever because you have this little robot that goes with you. And when he's scanning the environment for clues, like he finds something. And then that's the Picross puzzle is like revealing what it is that he found. Like, oh, it's a thumbprint or whatever. The other thing I really like about it is that it takes place in 1992 or 3. And I just think that's a very underrated time period to like set a game. And they really lean into the 90s aesthetic.
Sounds like a Dame game.
Street Fighter 2 era.
Tom reviewed it and gave it a very positive review for IGN. And I completely agree. It's a great game.
Oh, man. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Sam, can you reveal when your Animal Crossing review goes live?
I mean, it'll be up by the time this podcast. No, it won't be. No, so I can't.
Okay.
Soon.
Sometime in the future.
Yeah.
Sam will have a review of Animal Crossing, whatever the new one is.
And that's called the scoop.
It's
called New Horizons. And it has pinatas of a type in it.
Of a type. That's all the scoops we have for you this week. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Tina. Thank you, Tayo. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out.
I never told you I was broken. Left unspoken, and now you're on a plane.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.